Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your host, Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm Bob DeMarco. On this edition of the show, I'm speaking with knife modding power couple Lindy Liu and Richie B. Now, Lindy and Richie run Knife Modders, a much in-demand aftermarket detailing and modification service that will make your favorite knives unique and one-of-a-kind, just like you. Not to be corny, but that's what they just did for me. Now, I first met Lindy and Richie on Thursday Night Knives and followed their work as individuals on Instagram, but recently they combined their powers and made their business official. And that's when I was lucky enough to get on their books and get a spot to turn my Monterey Bay Knives Turbo, which is a very respectable, beautiful, well-built knife, into something truly transcendent and all mine. Highfalutin it might sound, but, I could stare at the green they anode on my handle for days. So we're going to find out how they do all this stuff and how they got into it. But first, be sure to like, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and then download us wherever you listen to podcasts so you can continue the conversation if you can't see it all here. And then join us on Patreon if you like what we do and you think it's worth supporting. You get a lot of extra content, like you'll get a little bit of extra conversation with Lindy and Richie from our conversation and other perks. So check us out on Patreon. Quickest way to get there is to go to thenifejunkie.com/Patreon. Again, thenifejunkie.com/Patreon. Thank you.
Do you carry multiple knives, then overthink which one to use when an actual cutting chore pops up? You're a knife junkie of the first order.
Lindy, how's it going?
Hi. He's running out to let our roommates know that we're going to go on this podcast with you and to not...
Sorry about that.
Hey, that's all right.
He started like yelling out in the hallway and we just wanted to let them know.
So you say Richie and Lindy there. I'm going to say Lindy and Richie because that's how I've always done it. Hope you don't mind.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, it works.
Hey, guys, welcome to the show. I want to say congratulations on making such a spectacular night. So I gotta start this off by showing it off, which I've been doing a lot. And actually, this light is probably not the best for it. But I sent this to you. This was the plainest of Janest Monterey Bay Knives Turbo, a beautiful, beautiful knife designed by Peter Carey, one of my favorites. And something I will never be able to own, probably a Peter Carey knife. You guys turn this into something that feels one of a kind and 100% special to me. With this crazy green, I asked for sort of a Statue of Liberty green or electric green, and a stonewash blade, acid stonewash blade, and then turned you loose, so to speak, on the clip and the backspacer. When you asked me what I wanted, I said, I don't know. Show me what I want. And you guys did a beautiful job. So I want to thank you in person.
I've said
it in video before, but thank you for this.
Yeah,
awesome.
It was fun to work on. Yeah, the lightning anode is kind of our original like mod, what kind of like started us off doing this modding thing. It was like we saw that and we just thought it was the coolest thing ever. And we had to figure out how people did it. So that was kind of where it started. Went with our staple mod and threw that as a little accent on the backspacer and clip.
Well, okay, so this is something I've been wondering. How do you break down the labor and the different tasks that come in, because people, man, they know what they want. If you got to go look at the Knife Modders Instagram page, you'll see all of your favorite knife models on there, but turned into unique versions of these. And you can tell that the owners of these knives really want you to pull out all the stops.
Yeah.
So how did you get into like doing this as a business?
It kind of escalated. So it started as a hobby. Like we were just playing around here and there. And then we had a couple people asking like, hey, could you do the lightning anno on our knife? And so it slowly kind of developed on its own. Like, what do you want to say?
Yeah. So we started on Reddit. And what we do initially was we would buy knives for really cheap that were really beat up. Mm-hmm. And then we take them in. We do a lightning anno. Like maybe an acid stone wash on the blade or something, depending on the condition. And then we'd resell them, make a little money off that. And then it kind of just snowballed from there. We went on to Instagram. We had like our old accounts from, when we were in high school and stuff. We just started using those.
Yep. And then we were both modding simultaneously. And so we realized that we were competing against each other. And it didn't make sense that I like am taking orders potentially away from him and he's potentially taking orders away from me.
So before that, before we made the Knife Modders account, we were so actually on Reddit, I was selling one of the knives I modded. And I gave the guy anyways, we exchanged addresses and he's like, oh dude, I literally live like 2 minutes down the street from you. Mm-hmm. And this is, this guy, Rob. And so we hung out and then he told me about, MBK. I had heard of them, of course, but I had never gone down to Carmel Cutlery. That's a shop in Carmel. But anyways, he told Sanford about me and he wanted to meet us. So we drove down there. And met up with him, and he was looking for like a modder to, you know, mod his knives, you know, just to bring more attention to his business and, you know, do something unique and cool. Flavor. But at that point, we were only doing like acid stone washes and lightning annos, and we were kind of like, yeah, we're not like, you know, we can anodize and do this. And he was looking for someone that could do like full on mods, like everything. So after that point, I was just like, shit, we kind of like blew that. Like, we should have been more confident.
We didn't sell ourselves enough. We just were so shy.
So we started, I just like went crazy after that point. I just started buying like a compressor, a blast cabinet, everything. Tools. And then the next time I saw him, I was like, yeah, I have all this and I could do all this now. So that kind of kicked everything off. And we realized from that point, we could do this, make this into a business.
Yeah.
Now, I'm all for the concept of, you know, you're never ready for important, challenging things, you know? I learned that in marriage. I learned that in having kids. I learned that in my job and also in my hobbies. But in this case, I think you were wise not to just say, yeah, we can do that, because you're dealing with a bunch of expensive knives. And if you jack them up, you jack them up and you're going to owe them money or you're never going to get hired again. So
exactly.
It seems like this was a wise choice.
That's something that like, I think, I just lost my train of thought.
So so after that point, we were talking with Sanford, talking about how we wanted make like a joint account. Cause at this point, like we're become pretty much family with Sanford.
Yeah.
Like we talk to each other on the phone every day. We go to his family's house and have barbecues. We go over there and do QC and he makes dinner for us. And he's just like
an awesome dude.
One of the best people I've ever met. Like he is an awesome dude. So yeah, we were all talking in a group chat, like trying to figure out a name for the account. And like, we're terrible with coming up names. If you look at our like mod names, they're just like awful.
It's
like,
terrible. We can't like, come up
like
with
our blast
cool.
and tumble finish, it's just B and T. It's like, we're not clever. But, Sanford threw the name out there, Knife Modders. And I was just kind of like laughing, like, oh, maybe he's just joking or something.
Or that's
and
taken. Then, there's
yeah,
no
or
way
it's taken.
Not
right.
So we go and check and sure enough, it's there. And we're like, wow, that's like perfect name, actually.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not the kind of thing you want to be too mysterious about, you know?
Yeah.
Why bother? Like, and if Knife Modders isn't taken, man, that gets right to the point.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and you can't say like Knife Modder.
Yeah, it's
without
like, oh, I'm thinking about going to a Knife Modder. It's like, well, why don't you use Knife Modder?
Yeah, it's just yeah, like, exactly. I don't know, it just works.
So, were you both collecting? I mean, so how did? Were you collecting before you got together? Did one of you introduce, I mean, I'm getting personal here, but did one of you introduce the other to knives, or were you two people drawn together by knives?
No. So he was into knives first, and he's got what, the Kershaw League, the Kershaw Blur, and slowly kind of escalated from there.
So I think it was like 2.5 years ago. I started watching like videos like LTK, Love the Knives, Nick Shabazz, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, I had no money. Like we were broke, like completely broke.
Uh-huh.
So we were buying like Gonzos and stuff like that. It's like, I don't know. When I get into hobbies, it's like I always do all this research to find out what's like the cheapest, but the best. So that kind of like,
bang for your buck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I was watching a lot of YouTube videos and Lindy like, couldn't stand it, didn't want anything to
I
do
wanted
it.
Nothing to do with it. It was, I was so over it. And he was like brainwashing me with all the knife stuff. And I remember going from like strenuously trying to ignore it to like one day turning on Nick Shabazz video he went to work and then I turned on a Nick Shabazz video to watch. And then it kind of just went downhill from there.
You're like, sometimes I just like to put Nick Shabazz on in the background.
Yeah,
about my business.
But I mean, you're pretty easygoing, and you kind of just like pick up on things, well, and you don't really like, I don't know, like heavily against.
I wasn't
anything.
Mean about it or anything, but it was just like, I don't know, I didn't have any knowledge about it whatsoever, but I knew that he was really into it, and so I've always been supportive, obviously, of like whatever he wants to do, and so he was super excited about it and wanted to explain all this knowledge that he had just gained from Nick Shabazz and LTK and like steals and all that stuff, and I was listening, but I didn't really get it. And then one day he sent me to work with a Gonzo. And at the time I was working in shipping and receiving. So I was like opening and tearing down like hundreds and hundreds of boxes per like 8-hour shift. So I got to really like use and like experience the knife and like how useful they were. And I remember coming home that day and then just like sitting down and like pretty much taking out a notebook and like writing notes. And he was explaining steels and G10 and how to spidey flick and like all this stuff, you know? And then I don't even know what happened from there. We started buying knives. I was so excited.
You actually bought like what we would consider at the time. She bought like a high end knife before I did. So what for us back then, like $100 was a high end knife, you know?
Yeah.
So she like, cause I think, you know, what I would consider like most of the knives I had were in lower end steel. And then I got a knife in D2, my first knife in D2. At the same time, she bought like a Ferrum Forge drop buck.
Yeah.
S35. Oh, wow. So I was like, shit. I do.
Yeah, I know. I got a titanium, like super steel, you know, all that stuff.
She's like, Richie, why are you half stepping? This is what you want to do.
Yeah.
I know. I remember like scrolling for hours trying to find the perfect knife. And I saw I think it was the Dow. The first one I got was the Ferrum Forge Dow.
Oh yeah, yeah, the Dow.
That's a cool knife.
Yeah, so fun. I was so excited to bring it to work and like use it. And then it ended up getting stolen. It was
she
so
like
sad.
Set it down. And then
yeah, I set it down at work, and then I turned around and it was gone. I mean, I was working at like a Dollar Tree in shipping and receiving, so I mean, like, I don't know. I shouldn't have set it down. That was stupid on my part.
But I bet you wouldn't do that again if you had to go back to that
Dollar Tree. Oh my god, no!
So, all right, let's talk about these processes that you do. And I want to start with the handles, because to me that's where the rubber meets the road, and it's also where I see the most crazy unique stuff happening with you guys.
Yeah,
that's not to say there isn't some exquisite stuff happening on the blade side. There is, but there seems to be a lot more sculpting and variation and stuff.
Right.
So I'll start the conversation with the texturing. Tell us about the different texturing you do. My favorite is the bark. Yeah. I love that bark texture.
Oh, do we have any?
Yeah, so do I have any bark? I don't think I do.
We'll scroll your page and show it.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. So for the barking, that was, you know, I had seen people do different types of barking. There's a lot of different types of barking out there.
Different styles,
and I felt like I didn't have the tools to do it at the time. So,
nice.
So I've just experimented and figured it out, and then it kind of evolved to the cross barking, and then we have stuff like rhino skin, which is something I just completely messed around and figured it out because I hadn't seen anything very similar to that. And then of course you can do other finishes on top, like, you know, black washes, or you can blast it with aluminum oxide and tumble it.
You can anodize it. You can do all
anodize
kinds
it.
Of things.
You can sand the flats and anodize it.
What actual tool are you using to dig into the titanium?
So there's a few ways we do it. We're not gonna like go into detail and disclose how it's done.
But No. I don't necessarily need that. But I look at some of the texturing, and I swear to God, I see you with a little chisel and a mallet, like. And I know that's not what you're doing.
No.
Yeah, there is a few ways to do it. You can do it on a belt sander as well.
Yes.
But ours is unique from what I've seen from other people.
Well, right on. We will keep that. We will keep that a trade secret. That's pretty cool.
Yes.
So I this knife in particular. Now I have no regrets, certainly. But this knife in particular, or anything with a contoured titanium handle, I feel would be a great candidate for that treatment in particular, because it's evocative of a tree with the roundness, and then the bark. I just think it's beautiful. But you also have been advertising, if that's the right word, but really featuring your frag
mm-hmm.
pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So here, this isn't finished. This is like fresh off the mill. So this is our larger frag that we do.
I would say that's like mid-size.
I don't know. I think this is like a good larger size.
Because the Spidey Chef we did was
larger. Oh, yeah, that's true. Oh, that is very true. We also do smaller frag, which would be like the squares are smaller and closer together. But this is like a sweet spot.
I would say so too. There's a lot of factors on the sizing. So you can either use a smaller end mill, so you get like small, the lines themselves are smaller, and then you can also do spacing differences. So you can change the size of the lines themselves and the size of the squares as well. And then obviously when you do closer together spacing, you can get more squares out of it and they'll just be smaller. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's quite a few different ways you could do it. And then also finishing, of course, you can anodize, you can blast it and tumble it, which is my favorite look.
Mm-hmm. You can ceramic coat it. We do ceramic coating too. So you can ceramic coat it and all that stuff.
The frag, it seems like there's some difficulty in that because the reason I assume that is that it seems like something everybody wants, but not too many people offer. I mean, like for a while, it was just something like, oh my gosh, you have to spend your life savings at Monkey Edge to get a frag pattern. And then it started to, you know, a little bit. But is there a special challenge with that?
I mean, you have to get a mill, obviously, which is you're going to spend at least, I don't know, you could get a lower end mill for like $800 from Harbor Freight, but you're going to have to do a bunch of mods to bring it up to where you want it. The Harbor Freight ones have plastic gears, which break. And then the digital readout is a huge thing. Otherwise, you're going to be looking at your wheel as you're turning it, counting each revolution. So the digital readout tells you exactly where you're positioned on the X and Y, which is, you know, Y forward and backwards, and then X side to side. So you can use that to guide you, spacing.
And then with the DRO, it adds to the cost ultimately, which is like, so you're typically going to spend like what, $15 to like $3,000 for like a decent mill.
Yeah. So for a mini mill, around that area.
Yeah.
Which is like something you could put on a
benchtop mill. Because we work in a pretty small shop. If we had gotten a bigger one, it would have taken up a lot of space. But the other challenges involved with it, the hardest part for me personally is work holding. So actually mounting the scale to mill it.
Yeah.
It's because like if you use fasteners like the screws, you're going to have to either go through the screw because you want the frag to continue through the pivot. Yeah. Because Monkey Edge, actually, they stop before it hits the pivot, but I like the look of it going all the way through.
Yeah.
So in that situation, you either have to, like, remove the screw and put it into another location or clamp it down. Mm-hmm. And then another thing with the mill is everything has to be perfectly flat. If you get, you know, even a 2,000th variation, you're going to see it in the frag itself. Yeah. Right. It won't be as deep. And then it's just going to look
funky. The line will taper in some areas.
The square will look bigger. So it's very involved and it takes hours to do. So it's definitely takes some practice to learn how to use it. I'm still in the very beginning stages. I want to start doing all sorts of different milling patterns. Learning here and it's taking some time.
Yeah. In our free time, and that's like what we want to start doing is experimenting more, like how we used to when we first started. It was just like having fun with it and experimenting and doing, you know, finding new mods to do, because that is something that I think is really important to the business to stay relevant, is that there's a lot of trends that happen in the knife community as far as like what people want, like frag is one of them right now. So is rock patterning. And, you know, after that dies down, it's just we need to find other things to keep people's attention. And just so now we're trying to find like a balance between our work life and then our play experimental, you know, like with different milling patterns and things like that. And which is great because we have had a lot of business, which is great, but it also doesn't leave us much time to like play like we used to.
Yeah. Cause we have a lot of stuff that we want to do.
Yeah.
And that's just, we have the material or whatever tools we need to do it and we have it all, but it's just, we don't really have the time to practice as much anymore.
Yeah.
Well, you hear that a lot from knife makers in the adolescence of their career, so to speak, where they've just gotten over the, you know, when they first hit and people are interested in their work, they have to take as many orders as possible to ensure their career, you know, to ensure that they're going to move forward. But at the same time, that's an albatross around your neck. You know, you have to do those orders have to get all that stuff out. And that could take years, you know, in that initial book. And during that period of time, you have no time for what you're talking about, experimenting. Yeah. So maybe that's what you have to, maybe these are the dues you're paying right now, because I saw on your page, not accepting new orders. Yeah. Like, these guys are busy, and you can tell, like, the way you're cranking out pictures when you work every day. So maybe this is something you got to go through. And then when your books are clear, then you can parse out time to figure out, you know, the next genius pattern.
Yeah, because at this point right now, it's like we're still trying to figure out how we're going to do it with opening books. We always, you know, in the beginning, we were thinking we want to just be able to have our books open always, and people can just hit us up and just tell us what they want, and they send it in immediately, and there's no, like, you know, waiting or anything like that. But it's just gotten to the point where it's, like, insane. Like, we thought, so we closed our books. They've been closed for, what, a couple months now?
3 months almost.
You know, we had thought maybe after a month we'd be able to open them back up. So we did start slowly accepting orders again, and we were going to work up to it and then just open them all the way. But it got crazy. So we started a wait list, and now that wait list is getting crazy. So we're trying to get through what we have. And then get through that wait list, and then we might have to figure out a different way to,
like,
take
book spots.
Yeah, book spots. We'll make a post, and then, you know, whoever says in first, we'll have 30 book spots, and then, you know.
Or we'll do, like, a random number generator thing, so we give people 24 hours. Everyone who wants to enter can enter, and then we'll, you know, pick 40 or however many we want to choose.
So, yeah, we're still trying to figure it out, but we might have to do something like that just to make it, you know, easier on us.
Yep. Because storage, right now, the biggest thing is storage right now. We don't have a lot of space in order to, like, and we want to take everybody's knives, but to help keep us organized and to just maintain what we have going, we got to keep it, you know, contained.
Yeah, and I also imagine it's a bit of a liability having a whole bunch of other people's expensive knives just hanging around.
Yep.
You know, so, I could see how you would want to maintain a small enough bit of traffic that you're not getting bogged down.
Yes.
Okay, so the anodizing. Let me ask you, I'm still on the handles here. I want to ask you about the anodizing now. I understand that this green is actually not a very easy color to achieve. Is that right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, green is, like, the most finicky. It's the worst. Not the worst.
Honestly,
the hardest.
Most of it.
All right. Before we get started, you have to explain the process for those who don't know, and I'm one of them.
How
to anodize titanium.
So how to anodize titanium. So you need an electrolyte solution of some type. So we use baking soda and distilled water just to create the solution. You're also going to need some aluminum foil and then some titanium, your titanium piece, like the scale. And you suspend that in the liquid, and it's connected to a power supply. And so the wattage of the power supply determines the colors that you get when you put it in the bath.
So what happens is it creates an oxide layer, and then as you go up in voltage, it creates a thicker oxide layer. So green is pretty much,
said wattage. Whoops,
yeah. So as you go up in voltage, it creates a thicker oxide layer. So green is pretty much the highest
oxide layer.
Yeah, the highest oxide layer. So it's the thickest oxide layer. So it's also more durable than the lower colors, which it would be bronze.
Right.
So that's the gist of it.
And so green is like the last color on the chart. Like that is the 92. It depends on your, like, how you etch and everything like that. But we typically do 92 volts for our green. And in order to do high voltage colors, you have to have a very, very clean process, because that's where you can get tripped up. As if you can wash your piece two, three, four times, and if you miss one little spot and you put it in the bath, it'll show. And it'll be discolored in that one area. So for it to anodize evenly, you have to have it be very clean.
I believe the reason people have trouble with those higher voltage colors also is because, so they try to anodize it, it doesn't go well. And then from there, they don't have a blast cabinet, and they don't really have any way to bring the finish back to what it was. The only way they could do that generally for people without a blast cabinet is etch it again. And when you keep etching it, the surface finish, it just turns to crap. Like, so then you're pretty much, you're
burnt.
You're burnt.
Yeah. When you try to anodize, like, your surface finish just really is like everything. It really matters in, like, how the colors and just how it looks, really. And etched titanium, especially if you've etched it a bunch of times, it has like a
frosty,
foggy look. Yeah. froggy.
Wait, you mean it won't show the color clearly, or
it'll just look muted and muddy.
It looks matte almost. I don't know how to explain it, but it's not as like vibrant. It's not nearly as
especially
vibrant.
When you over etch with Wink and then do a high voltage color, the green will just not look good. So yeah, your surface finish plays a heavy role in the finished product for electrolytic and any anodizing for that matter.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about blades? I know you do acid stone wash because you did this on mine and I love it. What else do you do? I've seen something that I hope you talk about, but I want to.
Yeah, so I think our hottest blade finish that we do right now is a mirror stone wash. That is, I think it is the hardest finish that we do. It's a lot of like labor intensive, takes hours and hours and hours to hand sand the blade to a mirror polish. And then we put it in the tumbler afterwards. But it is so rewarding. I think that is my favorite.
Yeah, I would say that's a more like premium finish. It does take a long time. Yes. You know, anywhere from depending on the blade steel, and there's a lot of factors, how blade deep length. The grind lines are, all that, but it can go anywhere from 5 to 10 hours.
Sometimes longer.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, most of the time it's somewhere in like the 5 to 6 hours. That's just for the sanding though.
And then we also like this, here. So this is carving. This is a Benchmade Anthem and it has some carving down the spine of the blade to kind of tie in the rock patterning on the scales. And then we also did a blast and tumble over the top. That's another finish that we do. Blasted and tumbled is probably our next biggest one is blasted and tumbled, mirror stone wash, and then obviously acid etch. And then I think, what other blade finishes do we do? We do regrinds, I guess.
Yeah, we could also do bead blasts.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I've never seen an Anthem look so good. I mean, it's a cool knife to start with, but man. Mm-hmm. And you reshaped, you reprofiled that blade also.
I did the carving, yeah.
Like the rock and then... What other, I mean, there's opening, like, so we can do like added thumb studs, like say you have a flipper knife and you want to turn it on like into thumb studs, depending on the knife, if it's capable or if it's.
If there's enough clearance between the handle and the blade.
Then right. We can add a spidey hole or flipper delete, little things like that.
So that's the mirror stone wash we're looking at right here.
Yeah, that is the mirror stone wash.
And then for people who don't know, that's what I was referring to when I mentioned that bark pattern to me.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There you go. The cross.
Yeah, usually when we do barking or rock patterning, if people want to anodize, they usually want it bronze. So that was the first one we had actually done in blue, which is
I love surprising. How that turned out.
Yeah, it turned out really
I love
good.
How that looks. Anodized barking. We don't get asked a lot. Usually for barking, we just do our blast and tumble finish. Uh-huh. But with I think it looks so good with anodized.
The only thing is, you know, there's the fingerprint thing.
Yeah.
But with our blast and tumble, you don't have to worry about fingerprints.
Yes.
So what are your favorite knives to work on? If you had to, and you don't have to say Monterey Bay knives. We'll just say that's Monterey Bay knives. But I mean, like when something comes in, what are the things that you're especially excited to see come in?
So I love working on Koenig Ariuses.
Yeah.
They go apart. You can take them apart so easily. They go back together so easily.
Seamless.
And they're just amazing knives. And since it's tie scales, a lot of texturings you can do. I love working on Koenigs for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that has tie scales that are not milled out is great because there's so many options. Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing you have to like consider when you're doing those textures. Like depending on how deep it's milled, like sometimes you can't do textures at all because you'll just go right through the scale. With rock patterning especially, it needs to not be milled that deep or that's I just right. have to be super careful.
So here is like what our rock patterning looks like. And so these scales aren't milled out, I believe. They're not. So yeah. So this, we were able to go a lot deeper on.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. I get what you mean. You're talking about the lightning pockets on the inside. Sorry, Lindy. I think I frightened you.
Weight relief.
I was thinking you were talking about if you had a knife that already had milling on the outside, a pattern. So, for anyone who might be confused, as I was, but I'm sure you weren't because you're following, like the intense, those giant pockets that are milled out here. They're so deep and they're so excellent for making this a light knife, and also the sound, of course, they add to the sound. But if you're on the outside sculpting inward, you have to be wary of busting all the way through.
Okay. Yes, exactly.
So what I do now is I just take some calipers and I check the depth, and then, you know, I check the entire depth and subtract, and then figure out how much I have to work with. Usually I'm hoping I could have, like, I don't know, at least like 30,000.
Yeah, 20 to 30,000. That's the sweet spot. But when it's not milled out, it's fun, because then you can go as deep as you want with rock patterning. And personally, the deeper you go with rock patterning, I think the better looks, because you have contrast. The deeper you go, the better with rock patterning.
And then it becomes a real texture also for grain. Yeah. You know, it becomes more utilitarian.
So, yes.
Jim just put up a video, beautifully shot, by the way, that your videos look great.
Thank you.
You have, I call it, and I know I haven't coined this phrase, but YouTube University to me. Like, I learn everything on YouTube now, and I have for years. And you are really living up to that moniker, because you can go to your channel and learn how to do most of this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, how did you get into the video aspect of all of this? And describe the path to getting to where you are now in the video side of things.
So I have another hobby kind of, I was super interested in like videography and stuff like that. I mean, I am by no means like, I don't know much, but I went to YouTube Academy and I watched a bunch of YouTube videos, like in the photography industry or videography, Peter McKinnon and, just other channels alike. And I got super inspired, and I figured creating a knife YouTube channel. I don't know, you see all these people like you and just everybody else that has a knife YouTube channel, and I felt super inspired. But I also wanted to have like a higher production quality, and I'm kind of a perfectionist in that sense. So I spent some money, or I invested in a nice camera and some lights and stuff, and then slowly kind of just, I'm still learning, the vibe that I want to have with our channel and what we're trying to do with it still. But it's a nice creative outlet, but it's also a way to like humanize Richie and I in the community, to bring our faces so people know who we are, you know, and what we're like. Because I know on Instagram, it's very, you can see all the pictures, but you don't really know who we are as people.
Yeah, I can't think of a single modder that has like, you know, that's really into the YouTube community or this small part of the YouTube knife community, that really like people know who they are. And I feel like we've done a pretty good job at, you know, showing people who we are.
Yeah. We're dorks. We're absolute weirdos. If you watch our live streams, you know, we are absolute bonkers.
Yeah,
like,
ridiculous.
We are crazy.
Making you fit in perfectly.
Is like with being, I don't know, we're typically kind of shy people. Like if you were to meet us out in public, you know, we're just losers. But when, what's kind of fun is that like, we're able to be ourselves, like how we act together with the live streams, because there's no one like actually there. And I feel like the live streams have definitely, I think actually even helped improve like our social ability. Mm-hmm. You know, we just feel much more confident, and we have friends, and the knife community is like such a special place. Like everyone is so like loving and kind and generous, and they've been nothing but supportive of Richie and I, and it's awesome.
Yeah, that is. I feel the same way about this community of people, and it's interesting because it's a weird, not a weird, I shouldn't say weird, it is an unusual thing.
Yes.
to be irrationally fond of. I mean, I don't understand.
No, I say that all the time with Richie. Like I just, it'll randomly hit me, just like the reality of like, this is so weird. Like, why are we just obsessed with sharp pointy fidget toys that we, you know, but we all come together and just, we love them so much. It just doesn't make sense. But I mean, it does, but it doesn't at the same time.
Yeah, it's a great enthusiast community, because there's little infighting. There's not too much, you know, there's not too much bad blood. It doesn't seem, you know, of course, there's some here and there, like anywhere else. It's made of humans. But, you know, I've been I was a martial artist for a long time. And that martial arts world, man, it's polarizing. People, oh, that kick is ridiculous, or, you know. My school broke off from that school at a certain time, and we cannot have a conversation, you know, without it devolving. But I don't know. It seems like the knife world, different place. And I was going to say the videos are also a great way, obviously, to sell your stuff because this is such a visual field and everything you do is specifically that.
And that kind of like happened by accident. Like I didn't really necessarily create the YouTube channel to like reach more people, or it was just kind of just happened that way where it just kind of turned into a good thing.
Yeah, because she wasn't sure if she was going to be like a reviewer or like what direction she wanted to go.
But and then at the time when I first started my YouTube channel, I was kind of doing reviews a little bit. That was before Knife Modder. So that's like, and if you go back and you watch the old videos, it's just super cringe. So the newer content is much better and it's more niched down to like knife mods and stuff like that. But yeah, a lot of the older content was so bad. So bad.
Well, you know, there's a learning curve. And unfortunately, the whole world gets to see it for the rest of time.
Yeah, thank God. Oh, my gosh.
So this begs the question. You were talking about famous knife modders, so to speak, or well-known knife modders. And, of course, my mind went to Tough Thumbs.
Oh, yeah.
And then there were a couple of other in that orbit at that time. But since then, I feel like you guys really are that. As you know, Jeff Blauvelt became Tough Knives, and I think he makes exquisite knives. I love
his knives are beautiful. Designs are so good.
We just had a custom, his reset, that it's his newer design after his shop was flooded, and he lost his notebook with all of his designs in it, so he had to come up with something new. And so he called it the reset, because he had to like start over, ultimately. And it was sent in, and it's beautiful. His work is incredible. I think that was my favorite custom that I've ever handled. Yeah. So nice.
We got to bookmark that because I want to ask you about customs and modding. but before we get there, I just wanted to ask you, do you have aims? Do you have aims to make knives?
I think it's in our future at some point, but I'm not sure how far away it'll be. Like, it's just, I feel like that's just the natural transcendence of knife modding. Like,
at this point, I know I could make fixed blades. I've done so many regrinds. I know I can grind a blade. I know I can make a handle. I just haven't done it.
Yeah, we want to make folders.
Yeah, I want to make folders. But speaking of that, we do have a knife design in the works that we're going to be having produced overseas.
Yes.
And we're hoping to have that, you know, sometime this year.
Yes, later this year.
We're hopefully still in the early stages of it, but it is going to happen.
Yes. So there's going to be a Knife Modders production knife. We're not sure of the name or anything yet, because like we said, we're terrible at naming things. But,
knife One by the Knife Modders.
Yeah, KMK, Knife Modders Knife.
This is exciting because, and I've said this before, like I'm really loving the designs that are coming out of knife enthusiasts, such as yourself and others that are being made by awesome, reputable companies. I love this trend, but I love that this is happening.
Yeah, me too.
Because all of these little nerdy preferences get not nerdy, specific preferences.
Get distilled
down into a knife the way knife lovers want to see it.
Exactly.
And I think that sounds great. And not for nothing, but you know Monterey Bay knives, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like 2021, like we've been saying, Kev's been saying it, like 2021,
yeah, Lefty EDC,
2021 was the year of the, what do you call it?
The boutique.
Boutique makers.
Boutique brands.
Boutique brands, that's what it was, which is true. You know, all of these knife guys starting their own knife company, like Vero was one of them, and then MBK and EMP.
Yeah, Noel EDC, Knives, all the people that have been, you know,
or the Gripper guy.
Brass Brigade.
And they're all so good. They're so good. I love their designs. They're very different. I feel like a lot of the models, they kind of start to blend together. And I feel like all of these boutique brands, they're just very unique. And it's very like, it's what made by the people for the people. And it's perfect.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, they might not look like how, you know, a designer who sits down at Kershaw every day to design knives makes a knife look. And that's what I love about them, too. They're totally unique. Like, I'm thinking right now of the Luft Concepts knife, you know.
The Avant.
That's what it was. Very different, but very, like, not that different. It also kind of looked like a Spyderco, but not, you know. Yeah. It's not like it was a derivative, but it had some of the same elements. And you could tell, okay, this person likes this aspect and this aspect of this kind of knife and this. And so, yeah, I think that's an exciting thing, but I would put you guys and Brass Brigade and KC and others, in a different category than I would Monterey Bay Knives and a couple of others. Yeah, they're boutique brands too, but they seem different.
Yes. Yeah. No, it is. It is. It is.
Yeah. Because those are like established companies that have been around for a little bit, have done large runs. And then all these other ones that are coming out are like still one man. You know,
that's a good point. Yeah.
One man, one design, and they're still working their way up.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them exciting to own, because, you know, I have a prototype that was popular, that was going around, that never quite got funded.
Right.
And so that design, until it's, you know, resurrected or whatever, is lost to history, except in the hands of the folks who were lucky enough to get a prototype.
Right.
So that's also exciting. But even so, even if it does get funded and it's a limited run, you have that. There's a pride of ownership.
Yeah. Yes. So, so we're not going to be, I mean, we have all the money that we're going to need to be doing it. So we don't have to worry about doing like Kickstarter or anything like that. I mean, even if we did, I think we would do well. I think the design will appeal to a lot of people.
I think so too. And what we really want, because obviously we mod knives, is that we want a perfect blank canvas for mods. So we're planning on holding some of the ones that we order that come in that we are going to mod and then sell, you know. I got to make a website. I have to make a website first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. Make a blank canvas that you can mod yourself. Other people can mod, or I mean, there. I have plenty of plain Janes, and I love plenty of, you know, I love the plain Janes too.
Exactly. Yeah, so
let me ask you this now. I touched on it before because you mentioned we were talking about Jeff Blauvelt. What happens when someone sends you a custom knife? Now, the reason I ask that is because I've heard different thoughts on it. I've heard, hey, once you buy a custom knife and that thing is your, you know, thing, you can do whatever the hell you want with it. And I agree with that 100%. But at the same time, I also agree with, you don't buy a Van Gogh and then tweak it with your own paint. So how does, of course, we're not talking about Van Goghs here. We're talking about working tools that have aesthetic appeal. So how do you guys come down on the modding customs thing?
So a lot of the times when we get sent custom knives in, they're like, there's issues with them or the finish is like trashed on them. So a lot of the time for customs, it'll be like a refurbishing.
Yes.
And I like to think that we have like pretty tasteful mods and, you know, we're not destroying the knife. No. Like you can always, you know, it after it's done, it's going to look great. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people that have tried to mod customs that have ruined them. And then somebody would try to, then the owner would try to send the knife in to the custom maker after the guy modded it.
And the
maker would see it and he's like, well, what the hell? Why?
Yeah, you just ruined
it. Yeah, he ruined it.
And that's something I think we also kind of take pride in, is that that's something like we want our mods to feel like it came just from the factory, like factory fresh. Like no one's ever touched this knife. Like it is brand spanking new from us, even though, yes, we did touch it, we did mod it, but we try to keep it as tasteful as possible.
And totally immaculate too.
We haven't had any issues with custom makers like hitting us up or anything like that. And I think most of them are cool about it. In our experience,
yeah, most of the fixes I think we've done is carbonizing lock faces, so a lot will come in
or just like a blast and tumble. Yeah, we've done some lightning annos, but.
We've done your stone washes too. Mm-hmm. He's actually working on a custom Rezenti Druid. He just did a mirror stone wash on it. We've done another mirror stone wash on a Druid before, but that's pretty much the extent of like what we do or we'll refinish Timascus. So like you did that, what was that? That one that you did for Scott.
KC Gray.
A KC Gray custom that we refinished Timascus, repolished it, reanodized it. But nothing too crazy. Very simple mods.
Okay, so I gotta ask you, ever have any botched jobs where you just had to eat crow and tell them that you jacked up their knife and, you know.
So yeah, more so in the early days, it doesn't really, these days, if something happens, it's always fixable and nothing like.
Cause we have the tools we have, what am I trying to say? We have everything at hand that if something were to go wrong, we also now have the know-how of like how to fix it. And we don't do, I mean,
we don't really accept work unless we're super confident in the mods that we're doing. Yeah. Of course, like every other modder, we have fucked up some knives.
You know, but we usually, I mean, if we accept an order that like maybe it's something we haven't done before, we do it on our own knives. So like we practice first on our own stuff to make sure that we're able to do it.
I can say I have launched some pocket clips in my shop and have never found them to this day after searching for 8 hours.
The buffer will launch.
They're buried in the ceiling somewhere.
Yeah, we tore apart the whole entire shop, like 8 hours
plus. We tore apart our water heater, thinking it fell into the water heater. We ended up, you know, we got a custom clip made for the guy, and which is, it was even better. It was,
yeah,
like
it was a Damascus clip. We got made for him.
Yes.
And it just had like a standard, you know, milled or.
Yeah, it was like a Pena Mula clip. It was just a Pena Mula. Wow. And we, a couple of those, but it was fixable. So it was stuff like that. Nothing like terrible or nothing too crazy that's ever happened.
You guys, I realize I put you in a terrible spot. We've been talking about how great your work is. And then I'm like, no, tell me about your failures.
It's part of it, you know?
So like anodized. Oh my God. He's super fluffy right now. It's like. But anodizing is one of them. That is honestly, it's so funny. Anodizing and acid etching blades. Those are the two mods that everyone can do at home. And they are the two most inconsistent mods you could possibly do. Like they are the highest, like they are more likely to go wrong than rock patterning or any of the other ones. Like it doesn't, it just, they're so finicky. So finicky.
Now, I mean, if you slip when you're rock patterning.
Oh yeah, that's terrible. Okay, yeah, you know what terrible. I mean?
But yeah, the thing is you'll do everything right with acid stonewashing and electrolytic anodizing.
And they'll still
and
go
sometimes
wrong.
You'll just get a dark spot on the blade or something. And then same with electrolytic or, you know, sometimes titanium just won't, it just won't take the anodizing no matter what you do. You'll
learn that it's maybe not the best grade of titanium because like lower grades of titanium can, they don't want to anodize the same
way. Or sometimes it is grade 5 and you'll anodize it and you'll redo it a ton of times, refinish the scales completely, blast them again. And you'll just get the same spot in the exact same location.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Primarily with higher voltage colors. Anything above around like 55.
Or even higher. It's usually 55.
Well, so what do you find of all of this? And by that, I mean turning your knife modding, which was once a hobby, into your business.
Mm-hmm.
What aspects of the business part of it do you find the most difficult?
So the business part of it, I mean, I think it's just, you know, everything as a whole, like we've never had our own business.
Yeah, learning how to run a business.
So, yeah, I mean, the whole business part is
the
difficult.
The business part.
Trying to manage, you know, everything from, you know, responding to messages on Instagram and managing our time. Managing our time is difficult.
That's it. That is the hardest part.
Because our shop is at our house. So
we're in a garage.
It's difficult to, you know. Like,
if he wants to work on something and I want to work on something at the same time, and we both need the 2x72, and we only have one 2x72, I have to like jump around to another order to find something that I can work on that he, you know, we so we can both be working at the same time. And then what else business? I think I don't know what other business.
Yeah, I mean it's just everything. It's all a learning process for us.
Yeah, learning how to run a business.
It's like this past year things have just really blown up. So just, you know, it's a challenge. Every part of it is a challenge.
Yeah.
From an outsider's perspective, it seems like you've embraced the business part of it because you seem to have a handle on your marketing, and by that I mean you regularly post your work on Instagram. I mean like regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great thing. You are, you have your own live shows in which you speak with your fans. You put up your videos. You do great work. It did not take long, you know, and I'm not saying that's a guarantee or anything, but when I got in on you, it didn't take long to get the work. It's immaculate. And, so I think you, you guys are, even though you're feeling your way through small business ownership, I think you're doing a great job so far.
Thank you. Thanks
for all those things.
Yes. Thank you so much. I think just being a part of the community also has helped us, like making new friends, and word of mouth has been like the biggest thing us. Word of mouth. And that's like our biggest marketing as far as marketing goes, was like word of mouth through just people being recommended to us, or some friends, like we're friends with Stassa or Kev from Lefty EDC. We always joke that he's our door-to-door salesman because every time he has someone on his live stream, he's like, have you heard of Knife Monitor?
Yeah, he'll have Leong Ma or like someone that has a production knife company. And he'll just like bring us up and he's like, oh yeah, you should think about
getting your knives modded. Yeah. Have you heard of knife modded?
That has actually worked out for us. Like we've had Asher contact us. We haven't done anything with him yet, but EMP EDC, through Lefty EDC. We actually have 40 of his knives in right now. And we did a run of 40 earlier.
A couple weeks ago. Yeah. And we're also going to be doing another run with, speaking of runs, Urban EDC Supply. We're going to be doing a small little batch this time. I think it's going to be 3 stovepipes, Spyderco stovepipes that are going to be coming in that we're going to be doing bark. I don't know, I have to look at the email, but yes.
That's pretty cool. I just spoke with Dave Ridbaum.
Yeah.
I love his work. I've been following him for 7 years, and that particular design, that stovepipe, when he makes it in the XL version custom.
Yes.
Oh man, to me that is just an absolutely stunning knife. So I want to ask you guys, what kind of advice can you give to, I'm not talking about people who want to become you and become knife modders and make a business, but guys like me who've got a whole bunch of knives. I'm pretty handy. I have a bunch of tools. I don't have mills and stuff like that. So what kind of advice can you give to someone like me who's got a case full of knives and might want to start tinkering? What's the best thing to start thinking about and to acquire?
Tools-wise?
1x30 if you don't have a belt sander.
I know you have like a, 3x48?
2x42,
nice, perfect. That's even better.
Definitely get a belt sander. If you have nothing at all, grab a 1x30 from Harbor Freight. It's great. We used that for probably like a year before we upgraded. It was pretty recent that we got our 2x72. Definitely a Dremel. That's an easy one with a flex shaft. Carbide bits. You're going to want to get a buffer. I mean, depending on how much you're looking to spend, but you can start out with a Dremel, easy.
And you can go to Harbor Freight and get a buffer.
Yeah.
You know, and buffer wheels are cheap. Compound is cheap.
Also, you could pick up, before working on your titanium knives, which are, generally over
$50,
you could pick up titanium plates on eBay.
They even have some on Amazon now.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So those are great. Like, dude, that is literally how I figured out like all of the textures I do now.
You practice before you do it on your expensive knives.
So right.
There is one thing of it though. Like when you're doing it on the plate, it's like, you could look at it. It looks cool. But when you haven't done it on an actual knife, it's hard to imagine what it's going to look like. So at some point you do just have to take the plunge and just do it.
Yeah.
Everything that we've learned has been through trial and error, other than maybe a couple tips here and there in the beginning from some people, like anything knife related on Instagram. He helped us a lot when we started.
Yeah, he was awesome.
But yeah, get a Dremel and just mess around.
Do your research though too. Like, I mean, this is the beauty of social media. Like you can, follow your favorite modders and like you can see, you have so much inspiration now. Whereas before, I know I've talked to Matt Christensen about this. He said, that we have an advantage because we had social media to draw inspiration from. But in his generation, him and Tuff, like they kind of, paved the way for other modders. They had to like just wing it and figure out what worked and what didn't. So make sure, do your research and draw inspiration and just have fun.
True that. I mean, that sounds like great advice. But I got to ask you one last question. Of all of the processes, now we've talked about the tools, of all the processes, is it easy to just jump into anodizing? That's the one thing that I'm
It is.
That's really the easiest. That is the first thing. Like you get some ferrochloride and you get.
Anodizing?
No, I'm saying the two things that you can do at home that are super easy, acid wash and standard electrolytic anodization. I actually have a video on our YouTube channel. It is the how to anodize. It's the very basics. It tells you all the things that you need to buy, the things, just the things that you need to get started. It's pretty much like anodizing 101. And then in the description, there is links to everything that you need to buy. A lot of the stuff you can get from around the house or from your grocery store, things like that. Yeah. But that is like the first thing that we ever, you know, we ever did. And it's so much fun.
And her video is like super straightforward.
Very
to the
basic.
Point.
Yeah.
And then if you can't afford a power supply, you can literally just get some 9-volt batteries and chain them together. That was how we did it at first.
Mm-hmm. Did it for a long time, actually.
And then that way with anodizing, you can experiment with different finishes as well. Like you can sand it, bring it up to a mirror polish with some sandpaper. Mm-hmm. You can figure out how to do satins and anodize over that because every surface finish will give you a different look.
Yeah.
Wow. Guys, thank you so much for coming
yes.
on the Knife Junkie podcast. This is awesome. I sometimes you just need someone to encourage you and to lower the hurdles for you just a little bit. Anodizing to me was like alchemy, you know? You send the knife out and it comes magically back. And I know there's electricity involved and that scares me, you know. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to having more knives modded. But I guess I better get on your books real soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having us on. It was fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This was great.
My pleasure. Take care.
Don't take dull for an answer. It's the Knife Junkie's favorite sign-off phrase. And now you can get that tagline on a variety of merchandise, like a t-shirt, sweatshirt, hoodie, long-sleeve tee, or on a pillow, coaster, tote bag, coffee mug, water bottle, sticker, pen, or apron. And with COVID-19, you definitely need a Don't Take Dull for an Answer face covering. Let everyone know that you're a Knife Junkie with your Don't Take Dull for an Answer merchandise. Get yours at www.theknifejunkie.com/dull. That's www.theknifejunkie.com/dull.
I'm pretty sure we're going to be taken off of YouTube for mentioning COVID-19. Something that happened a while ago before what's happening now. Anyway, it was such a pleasure to have Lindy and Richie on the show. And man alive, if you can get on their books or if you're interested in this kind of work, go to their Instagram page and check out the beautiful things they do with the production knives. And now I know custom knives sometimes that we all know and love. You'll be glad you did. Check in with us next week for another interview with another great knife world person. Also, check out Wednesday supplemental show and Thursday night live 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. And we will talk then. Until then, for Jim working his magic behind the switcher, I'm Bob DeMarco saying until next time, don't take dull for an answer.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, theknifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at theknifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on theknifejunkie.com/Instagram and join our Facebook group at theknifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@theknifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487 and you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.